is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hour two starts now. It's me in terms of way back Wednesday pre-2009 songs about fighting. However, this was your last song.
Songs about fighting, because it is fight week.
Are you going to post the list?
I am.
Okay. So we'll post the list at some point.
Nick had eight. You had seven.
Yeah, because of the open.
So that's why I'm replaying this one.
I thought I had eight.
No.
Okay. Well, that's all right. Nick, I'll take it.
Sure.
By default.
No problem.
So 614 area code mentions the fact that Luka Doncic should be in the MVP conversation. Point taken. Absolutely.
He might be. Give it another 10 games if he keeps playing like this.
He's been on fire. And Cody mentioned the fact that this is ridiculous that we're talking about MVP this early. Well, you know what? They're talking about it nationally. It's involving a local superstar on your favorite team. I thought it worthy. They thought it worthy. We'll deal with it. Okay, so the other news of the day is the fact that Myles Garrett had his appeal hearing, which he appeared for in person with his peeps. We're going to wait for what verdict comes out of it. But interesting that a Texan or former Texan player that did something while a member of the Texans is being used as Exhibit A in why Myles Garrett should have his suspension reduced, Nicholas.
Yeah, and I looked at the video again because I do remember the incident.
Refresh the peeps. Antonio Smith.
Correct, because that's the precedent that they're quoting in order to help reduce Myles Garrett's suspension or at least get him out of the indefinite status. And I went back and looked at it just to make sure I didn't, you know, my memory wasn't foggy. The two differences that I see is number one.
So refresh the peeps before you give your opinion. Right, Antonio Smith pulled off Richie Incognito's helmet, swung it at him. Did not hit him, got suspended for three games?
It was two preseason games and one regular season game. So, yes, my bad for not giving the details there. So the difference I see is, number one, the intent was still there. He looked like he was trying to swing the helmet at Richie Incognito's head, but he missed. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one big difference, the fact that he missed. I think the second thing is, you could see Mason Rudolph take off his helmet because he knew he was basically being manhandled and dragged by Myles Garrett. Richie Incognito's helmet just came off. Mm-hmm. And then Antonio Smith saw that as an opportunity to grab his helmet off the floor and then swing. So if I was representing Myles Garrett, I will say this, not a bad move.
No, I like it because if you look at intent versus what actually happened, reality, intent versus reality, the intent might have been the same with both guys swinging the helmet. But because in both cases, there wasn't severe damage done. In the case of Smith, he missed. In the case of Garrett, he lucked out and the collar of the helmet is what hit Rudolph. I can see where they use that as an argument and going, so if that's the case and the result of both situations were basically a swing and a miss and a foul tip, then if he got three games, Garrett should get three games. Great work by his attorneys, if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that they were able to remember that, and they had to. I mean, if you're going to sit there and get out of an indefinite situation, people are talking about them being okay with him not showing up, not playing until next season. Some people have even said, I don't mind him being suspended a few games into the regular season next year. A lot of people are looking for that real severe punishment. The reality is both of them got lucky. Both of them swung and missed. Well, one swung and missed. Both of them got lucky in the fact that neither of the players that got hit by a helmet or almost got hit by a helmet severed any significant injury. And so you're talking luck now. You're talking a lot.
But isn't it essentially the difference between murder and attempted murder? You attempted to maim the guy.
No, because
you just didn't get him.
I mean,
yes, no, Tyler.
I think Rudolph probably should have some sort of punishment.
I don't disagree,
but
I'm saying the intent was there to do damage with a helmet. The way you see him swing that thing.
I agree, but I mean, I think part of his appeal is probably just going to be that he was a little too amped up, too in the moment, and let his emotions get the better of him. And I don't know that they're going to reduce any sort of punishment because of that.
I just don't, well, first he has to have some sort of suspension served. I mean, they're appealing the indefinite status. So, I mean, what is it really being reduced from?
Honestly, I think their intent the whole time was he's done for the year and he'll be back next year.
I would imagine that. I would think that because he connected. He connected on Mason's unprotected head,
right?
For lack of a better word. I mean, that's just the reality.
Sounds
is.
Sounds like your sex life.
I knew you were going to say something, but I mean, I don't know how the NFL is going to look at this. I don't know if they're going to use that precedent that his representation used as a factor. I think they have to at least consider it when they make their decision.
Sure. I think the other interesting thing to point out here is that the other appeals were going to be heard today, including Marquise Pouncey's appeal, in which a member of the Steelers organization was on a conference call with him because they said one of the things that to also notate about Garrett was he showed up in person. So that he basically lets people know how much he cares about this, how much he was affected by it, how much that he wants to show his remorse for it, because it's mostly done over the phone, which was the case with Pouncey. But the interesting thing is that the Steelers believe, and Dan Graziano of ESPN is reporting, that the reason why the league gave Pouncey a 3-game suspension when all he was basically doing was sticking up for his quarterback was because they don't want him to play in the Week 13 rematch against the Browns.
I saw that.
When it could get nasty again.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know if that's the right way of looking at it. I mean, I can kind of see why you do that, but at the same time, if you can't put him back in there after he served time and then he continues to start mess with that same team to the point where it gets egregious, then what's the point of having, you know, like, what's the point of having punishments? I don't think they should word it that way. I think if they really want a 3-game suspension, it's because that's what they feel is warranted for his behavior. You know, you think Pouncey's going to forget those players going forward next season? There's still going to be that hate
from
towards
the protocol
him.
In the locker room. You would be chastised beyond belief if you didn't support your teammate. So what Pouncey did, of all the guys that were suspended, Pouncey's actions to me are the most justified because of the fact that he was sticking up for a teammate that had just been hit in the head with a helmet that was completely wronged. In terms of Obenjobi of he hit Mason Rudolph from behind without a helmet on.
Yeah.
Cheap shot,
that
one game, that's it, weak ass stuff, and you deserved it. Okay? The Garrett thing up for discussion, but probably minimum of 3. Maximum of going into next season. That's why I said all along they wanted him to be done for the year.
I'd say minimum of 6.
But, that's what I'm saying. But that's not that big a deal. I'm saying minimum of 3 when you're talking about what they're trying to talk about, the Antonio Smith situation.
Oh, okay.
But overall, I think he got what he deserved in 6. It'll be the rest of the season. They'll be done with it. That's the way I see it going. But I think of the 3, Pouncey has the best argument for, I was just sticking up for my teammate. I didn't do anything overly egregious.
I wouldn't be mind if he just went down to 1. I'm not. If the NFL made that decision, I'm not mad at it.
But also leads credence to exactly what Graziano is reporting, which is the league doesn't want him to play.
Right.
Because essentially there's going to be axes to grind all over the place already with that matchup. And if he's on the field, he's going to probably look to take matters into his own hands.
Sure. But I will tell you this. If I'm the Steelers head coach and they got lucky enough to where Pouncey only gets suspended 1 game, and then you knew he was going to play the Browns again. If I'm the coach, I'm like, listen, Pouncey, you got off lucky. You got off with just a one-game suspension. Don't go out and cause any more trouble in this game. How do you not approach Pouncey and say that? Now, if he can't control himself or it's in a situation where he's just so angry, I can see that too. But if I'm the Steelers and I was lucky to keep my offensive lineman for those 2 games, I would want him to make sure he stays on the field. Obviously, there's a rivalry and there's emotions and all that other stuff, but I'm just saying.
Well, but if Ogunjobi's only going to get 1 game, he'll play in that game. So then why can't Pouncey?
Sure.
That's my argument. And if of the 2 situations, I think that more, as you even said, more of the cheap shot was Ogunjobi, then Pouncey sticking up for his teammate should only get 1 game, in my opinion.
No, you're right. No, it's a good point. It's a good point. Look, the NFL is going to have to make a decision, but it also sets a new precedent, too. So now you've got 2 cases that other agents could go back and look at and say, look, this is what it is. So it depends on how serious the NFL takes this going forward.
And also worth noting, by the way, that at 11 o'clock this morning, Mason Rudolph addressed the media for the first time since all this happened, and he said, I should have done a better job handling the situation. I have no ill will towards Myles Garrett. I have great respect for his ability as a player, and I know that if Myles could go back, he would handle the situation differently. And he went on to say, as for my involvement last week there's no acceptable excuse. Bottom line, I should have done a better job keeping my composure in that situation and not fall short of what I believe it means to be a Pittsburgh Steeler and a member of the NFL. And he also said he did not say anything verbally that would have sparked Myles Garrett.
Okay. I mean, that'll be, I mean, that's, I guess
those were all questions that were out there, right?
Well, those are legitimate questions too. Like what was said, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they always talk about how, well, this player said this about my family and blah, blah, blah. And sometimes it turns out to be a lie. There's drama on the field too, even though they're grownups. Let's be honest. A lot of them lie and embellish a little bit. We don't know that. I don't know if anybody was mic'd up, if there's any evidence of him not saying that. But for what, at least he acknowledges it, because in reality, a lot of the real quarterbacks, like established quarterbacks, are not doing that. Brady's not doing that. Drew Brees is not doing that. Yeah, Matt Ryan is not doing that. You know, an Aaron Rodgers is probably not doing that.
Philip Rivers will, but he just won't cuss at you.
I was going to say, he'll keep it clean. He'll keep it G-rated.
He looks so tiny. Who was that player that he grabbed? Philip Rivers?
The other night?
No, this was like 2-3 weeks back. Wasn't that the reference you were making?
No, because he's a notorious crap talker without ever cussing.
Trash talks every single game.
No, but remember that game 2 or 3 weeks ago? I'm pretty sure he was trash talking there where he grabbed the guy's helmet at the end of the game. Wasn't it him? It was him.
I don't know. I don't remember seeing it.
The defensive player he grabbed was probably 8 inches shorter than him. I'll look it up.
And I always appreciate he still keeps it local by calling the bench, too, because Philip Rivers on a mobile is outstanding. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. It is hour number 2 of the 3-hour show. It is The Usual Suspects. Keep it right here, ESPN 97.5.
The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, still rolling through the first half of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. If you're just tuning in, L.U. Dillon, Barry is out. Your buddy Nick is in. Tyler's behind the glass.
Yes, sir. What's
we up? Take you till 4. Blitz takes you till 7. Then Nick is out rest of the week in Vegas with the Blitz. Tomorrow, they're going to do a lineup shuffle. Charlie's going to take our slot from 1 to 4. We're going to take the Blitz spot, but it's basically the me of we with Raheel.
Yes.
And Aaron Rabel, because you're going to be in Vegas. And then Friday, Josh Jordan and I are going from Moneyline on Sundays. He and I are going to do the show. Tyler, do you know in the lineup shuffle why it is that Charlie didn't just take the Blitz's spot and we stay put where we were?
No.
That's the right answer. Well, that's the right answer, Tyler. I
AJ
know why.
Told me AJ about question, why. Bitch.
Yeah. I know in my head why too, but I was just wondering if you were gonna spill the beans.
Okay. I don't really remember.
I don't really know either.
I was told, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I was going to say, you misremembered, and that would be the best answer you could give.
Did you see this tweet by Le'Veon Bell earlier this morning?
I did not.
About 9:45 this morning. Apparently, he's pretty upset with all the random HGH blood tests that the NFL has been running on him. Apparently, he's gone through 5 random blood tests in 10 weeks.
In one season?
A little excessive, because of all the needles, he's a little bothered by it for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
He says, whatever y'all looking for, it obviously ain't there, and I'm not about to keep allowing y'all to stick me with those dirty ass needles.
Okay, whether you're a needle person or not, here's the way I interpret it, and I guess the NFL is different than the NBA. I know from an NBA drug testing perspective, the way at least it used to be, was the veterans knew they could only get tested once. Once they got that one test out of the way and came clean, then they could have a good old time the rest of the season. I know that for a fact. Now, I don't know if that's changed or not, but 10 times or however many times... That's excessive.
I think Le'Veon Bell may have failed for marijuana before, and maybe they're using that as a
Yeah, that might be a different factor. Like, if you fail, that you can get tested more. I can see that as well.
But if he hasn't failed for marijuana in quite some time, you would imagine that they would lay off a little bit. I mean, you're talking about an incident that happened in 2016. It's not like he's been, you know, failing for marijuana. I mean, unless he's using other stuff. I mean, if he's losing if he's using performance enhancing drugs and stuff like that, he did take a year off and was still kind of able to come back and not really miss a beat, right?
I mean, well, the interesting thing to me, yeah, because I, you know, obviously don't follow the Jets, and we know that Jake Asman on the network side here is a huge Jets fan.
Yeah,
so I had made the comment in passing to him that amongst the other things that are wrong with the Jets, it just doesn't look and seem like Le'Veon Bell has performed up to what was expected of him when they signed him. And he said, no, on the contrary, he goes, go back and look at the film. Between his pass catching and the effort that he's putting forth on every run, he's lived up to his half of the bargain. I was surprised to hear a Jets fan say that with as bad as that seems like that whole situation with Gaze and the Jets has been this whole season.
I think they're realistic about what the problem is. I mean, I shouldn't use the word realistic because I'm not necessarily sold on that front office. Sorry, Jake Asman, but I think realistically it's really hard to single out Le'Veon Bell as being a problem or even as a guy that's underperforming when you consider what's around him on that team. But at least he's been able to stay healthy. I guess that's a five is a bit excessive.
Adam Gase to me is the problem with the Jets. I don't care what.
I don't like him with the Dolphins.
I didn't like him with the look at the press conference. Once I saw the Sam the Olympic Eagle cross-eyed, shady eyes looking thing and whatever he had going on, I was like, talk about a guy I couldn't trust. And I don't care what everybody says about him being a freaking offensive genius. I think that everything wrong with the Jets is the fact that they got the wrong guy at head coach.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a situation where that was what was available or the front office really believed in Adam Gase. A lot of people, not a lot, but I've heard people say the situation that they had in Miami with Adam Gase as the head coach wasn't necessarily his fault. I don't know how you can justify that, but you're right. A lot of people do consider him an offensive mind. Hell, there was a lot of people that thought Bill O'Brien was a quarterback guru and an offensive mind as well, and a lot of people still question that. So I don't know. I don't feel like they have what it takes in terms of a front office, to give you their best possible chance to win. I feel like their mentality is a bit, I don't know, obsolete.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right, let me ask you this. All right, because we talked about Jake Asman being a Jets fan. I don't know where you guys are at this. Anything so serious in terms of your fandemonium that you would murder someone that was cheering for the other team?
No.
I did not hear about this till I saw this today on Busted Coverage, but did you know that there was a shooting after the LSU-Alabama game in which now it turns out that David Fulkerson, the guy who shot the victim has now died. And there are more facts coming out. It turns out that he shot the victim because he was cheering for LSU.
Yeah, see, I knew college football fans were crazy, but it's getting ridiculous if that's the case.
Turns out that they had gathered with their girlfriends for drinks, a cookout, the football game. They were cheering for the different teams. They fought after Merritt called the football player an expletive, and Fulkerson mistakenly thought the comment was directed at him and not the player. The girlfriends tried to step in to break up the fight, but Fulkerson pushed the woman to the ground, went to his bedroom, came back with a gun, shot Merritt in the face, and now he has died. Is it really that serious, people?
Some of these SEC, I'm not going to single out SEC fans, but college football fans in general, they're just absolutely crazy. I thought it was crazy when the, what was his name? Updike, the guy who poisoned the tree in Alabama.
Yeah, the two big trees at Auburn.
That was like a historical yep. tree. And yep. you just, I mean, that
now
was.
Here's, let me ask you this, Nick. I mean, would your sister ever come to your rescue and say, if someone did that to you because you were cheering for a team, would your sister come out and say, hey, even though everything that has happened is tragic and someone took Nick's life, we have to learn forgiveness. If we don't, it's going to control and hurt us the rest of our lives.
Yeah, I can see that, actually.
Your sister would forgive the person that killed you over a football game?
You'd be surprised what people will forgive. Yeah, I actually believe that.
My sister may celebrate. But I don't think she'd ever forgive whoever did it.
It just messes with you, man. Because you want to, like, if you let that mess with your head for the rest of your life, you're gonna have to eventually let go. I can see that. I actually can see that. I can absolutely.
I know there's a lot of people, and I'm not getting into gift shops at churches, but there's a lot of religious people, and I understand that they preach forgiveness and they believe in it. But with something like that over something so stupid, I would have a hard time finding it in my heart to forgive whoever did it.
Yeah. And look, it's different. Like, you know, when they talk about, like, let's say you're in love with somebody, you're in love with your wife, or your wife is in love with her husband, obviously, and it was a crime of passion. I think that's a bit different. You just being too emotional about a team, that's you got to have some self-control.
Yeah. Fighting in the parking lot. And I get it, alcohol's involved and a lot of crap talking's involved because you don't know the people and they all have, you know, different levels of what they think is acceptable from crap talking. I understand if there's going to be some push and shoving and maybe a few haymakers thrown in the stands or in the parking lot, but you ain't getting a gun and shooting someone in the face over it.
Just tell them to shut the bleep up and sit the bleep down like Phil Jackson did when he told Mark Wahlberg.
And Matt Damon.
Because he obviously was not happy with them cheering. I can see that being frustrating if you're a fan. You know, you're losing. You're not, you know, things are not going well. You're allowed to get a little emotional. It's all good.
Also the price you pay NBA by putting those seats so close to the benches, not just courtside, because now you do run the risk of facing the wrath. As much as the NBA fined Russell Westbrook and other guys for slapping phones out of people's hands and things like that, well, guess what? You're also the league that preaches you put fans closer to the action than anybody else. Part of that is also the negativity of those people that close can say and do some things that aren't going to sit well with the players playing the game and the coaches coaching it.
And I think that's the reason why they have to literally work with other avenues to fix that, because obviously that's going to be something that's going to take years to fix. I mean, years and years. I mean, how long does a stadium normally last? 10, 15, 20 years. Once you've designed it, it's kind of stuck that way. You're not really, I mean, how is Utah going to fix that situation unless they absolutely remodel
It ain't even about that, Nick. It's about the mentality of the people living in Salt Lake City.
You're not changing the mentality, though.
Because I've told you for years, the toughest place to play for more reasons than one, Salt Lake, because the fans, for as much as they preach to be religious and holier than thou, they're dirtier than dirty and nastier than nasty when there's a game going on.
Whatever it is, it's going to cost more money. You're not changing the mentality. You're probably not going to be able to change the stadium. Maybe you enforce more arrests, more bans. I don't know, but
it ain't going to do it.
It's not. It's a problem.
It's in the milk. I'm just telling you. All right, first half is gone. Second half is coming up. That means we've got 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show is coming up next. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 90 in the books, 90 still to go. That's the second half of the show, teed up right now on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Way Back Wednesday, songs pre-2009, about fighting in honor of the fact that Nick is covering the fight in Vegas along with a plethora of ESPN 97.5 SB Nation types.
I am. I will be there Wednesday through Sunday. The Blitz will be there. We will be promoting Wilder versus Ortiz live from... not the MGM Grand, but the T-Mobile Arena.
So safe to say you will not be consuming any alcohol. You will not be partaking in any kind of wacky weed. And you will be keeping it on the straight and narrow for the entire time you are there.
We really didn't go too crazy. We obviously did some drinking because AJ is such a big... beer connoisseur. So I do try out some new beer. You know, there's always a new brewery popping up somewhere in town. So I do like to do that. And I do, I like to enjoy whiskey. So yeah, yes. There will be some drinking involved.
I will say, if you're going to travel with this station, it's best to have Arthur on your side. Because when you travel with AJ, you know you're going to hit a Brazilian steakhouse.
And you hopefully know not an organic one like last time.
What?
Yeah, remember we had that, we went to that.
Not the one in Dallas.
Well, the one in L.A.
The one in L.A. We weren't with you for.
Yeah.
Organic.
It was the first ever of its kind. It was in downtown L.A. It was a all organic, grass fed Brazilian steakhouse.
What's wrong with that?
That's what I thought. AJ's the one who picked it, and I'm not blaming him because we always go to like usually the same two spots, either Texas Day Brazil or Fogo de Chao.
Right.
This one time he's like, look, man, I looked up a local one. It's not too far from where we're at. It's got great Yelp reviews. Let's check it out. We went over there, and the waiter explained that it was the first of its kind in the country, and it has no hormones, and it's all grass-fed, which is basically, you know, the translation of that is it doesn't have any taste. It was just bland.
Oh, really? I was going to say, yeah, I'm trying to figure out where the drawback and all that
give
is.
Give me the hormones, because it definitely...
Tyler, have you ever indulged in organic?
I guess, yeah. Like
at Bernie's, they have the grass-fed burgers.
Store, yeah, Bernie's, stuff
like that. Would you agree with that? I mean, isn't that just a matter of preparation? You
maybe
can still
they're just
put
not
like,
using enough salt.
Yeah, you could put like natural spice, salt and pepper and whatever, right?
Honestly, if I were you, I would just be hanging out at the Taco Bell cantina the whole time.
Why?
Because they serve alcohol and you can get Taco Bell all in the same place.
Yeah, but if you're going to Vegas and you're only eating Taco Bell, I think you're selling yourself and the experience short, aren't
well,
you?
Well, if you're going to Vegas and you're eating, I mean...
Especially eat like if you're one eating on the company ticket?
One meal a night. Well, okay, that if somebody else is paying for it,
yeah.
Go do whatever.
You I should probably go wouldn't to, go to...
There's a place in the Cosmo called Egg Slut, which is delicious breakfast.
I've read articles about it's it really and seen good. Reviews.
I think there's a place called Secret Pizza in that same place that I need to try. Have you been there, Tyler?
I've heard of that. That's the place that's like the doors in the back alley or whatever. Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't been there yet.
The line is ridiculous.
What about this? What about the burger joint you went to last time?
I usually go to, that was when, you know, my former boss, Mike Pearson, my boy, we would always go to the spot. That was like our thing. Yeah. With AJ, we're more on Brazilian steakhouses and beer. But yeah, I mean, I love burger joints too. I mean, I've gone to In-N-Out over there. I'm not trying to spark up a discussion between In-N-Out and Whataburger. But there's definitely no shortage of places to eat when you're in Las Vegas.
No, that's what I'm saying. You indulge, man. I mean, the restaurants there are fantastic.
The Gordon Ramsay burger, and I think that's in the Planet Hollywood.
I've heard about it. Never had. Legacy Stadium, if you want to watch sports, gamble, and have good food. Mm. In the Venetian, I think that's another good spot. Mm. Serendipity is another good spot for breakfast. What else is there? There's a bunch of good
over stuff. Under on the times that how many times during this trip you and Matt Peralta are going to get together to watch games, bet, and hang out?
I've actually hung out with Matt Peralta in Las Vegas, so
yeah, over under on that this time.
I might hang out. I mean, I don't mind hanging out with Matt Peralta. We're cool. Okay. He actually took me to my first Texas A&M game, like the game the Aggies played against Alabama when they threw three pick sixes. That was
you're
actually
a better man than me, Nick. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I know he doesn't like you, or you don't like him. Rightfully
I've
so.
I've never met the man. And he's taking
well,
shots
he was taking
at me,
shots so, at your work. What was it? He didn't like your piece on the...
yeah, because he's a masshole. he's a masshole that supports the Red Sox. So when I did the video, which at the time was the most viewed piece of content in the history of Sports Map on the Red Sox using pitchers using pine tar, he decided to cowardly go behind the scenes and say, are you really going to... Is my employer really going to put something offensive out there like this? And I was like, say it to me. He would never do it. So,
I think you can count on one hand the people who like him.
Yeah,
I love that we're talking
everybody.
About this because I really hope he hears Joel saying all
and
this.
And I don't care because I challenge him. Matter of fact, he had his producer called me one time and said, hey, I was wondering if you'd join me on the Matt Peralta show. And I go, no, you can tell him to kiss my ass. And you can quote that exact quote right there. No, you can tell him to kiss my ass and never ask me again. Period. End of story.
Oh boy, you really didn't like it when he took well because he's a big Boston fan. Like
he
you
also
can't...
then the second one I did another one he didn't agree with was something Boston right and so he tweeted out I can't believe my employer would be putting out content like this on the website. We've never met. I've never said a thing about him and missing 8 straight picks to start a year and other things that he's done. But he decided to come at me indirectly. Like, at least be a man about it. Go, hey, man, we've never met, but I'm a big Red Sox fan, and I don't agree with this. But I was like, okay, dude, then we already know where we stand before we even stand. So there you go.
Yeah, just don't talk about his Red Sox. Don't talk about his Patriots. Don't talk about his Celtics. And don't talk about Conor McGregor, because then he hates you. Well, other
perfect.
Than that.
I'll mention all four in a segment. I could give a rat's ass. News of the day, as we mentioned, Myles Garrett showed up in person as we reset the deck for the second half of the show to meet with the NFL. Meeting lasted a little less than 2 hours. The appeal process, the league says they're trying to go fast and quick with this and their decision simply because they wanted to put it behind them. The appeal was also heard for Pouncey of the Steelers. So there, if we have any news on that, we'll pass it along. Also, tonight will be the first time in the history of the Clippers that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George will take the floor together for a nice little get-together between the Clippers and the Celtics in L.A., which can be your nightcap after watching the Rockets in Denver in the Mile High Altitude take on the Noogies, the Rich Creamy Nuggets, and that'll be two NBA games to watch. And this from the real Jeff Passan. Not the fake account, P. Rendizzo.
The verified blue check.
Yes, the verified blue check, Jeff Passan, has just reported that at the owners' meetings for Major League Baseball, Jim Crane just walked through the lobby and said to the media, if you want to talk about baseball, I'll talk about baseball. What else do you want to talk about? Any other issues? And at that point, two police officers escorted him away.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably not the best time to ask questions coming out of that meeting. That would not be a smart move.
But also, do you really think anybody's going to want to talk to Jim Crane about anything other than this scandal?
Exactly. That's why it was probably smart for him to leave. Because, I mean, even Luna looked bad when he said, did you, you know, because one question is going to be, one question that could very potentially be asked is whether or not he had knowledge. Now, mm-hmm. You can actually make a case that he may not know. May not know.
I don't think anything.
Kind of.
Stop it. I don't think there's any owner that doesn't have a real good understanding of everything that goes on with a sports franchise that they own.
Including what's going on in the bullpen where he's not sitting?
I think he knows. I think, believe me, and especially if front office people are the ones sending the emails, I think, and he's the kind of shrewd businessman too that ends up in these meetings going, I support that. Here's, if you need money financially to try and put that thing together, that part of the process to support whatever software, whatever you need, travel for scouts to see if it actually is effective. I think you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably, you know what? That should make it even more important for him not to answer too many questions, if any, coming out of that meeting, because you know what they were going to ask.
Speaking of owners, we also need to at least address this, as the Carolina Panthers owner has come out and said some pretty strong comments in terms of mediocrity and accepting it. And also how that might sit with his head coach. So we can talk about that when we get back with that and a whole lot more on the agenda. It's a Way Back Wednesday on The Usual Suspects right here on ESPN 97.5.
Is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Great song. Not sure that it would pass specifications in today's day.
What do you mean?
I think that you don't use the terms that they use in this song in referring to people of Asian descent.
Oh, it's not. Oh, yeah, it's not politically correct anymore. Yeah,
I've learned all that when in my days of working with Yao Ming, which we found out very quickly what was acceptable, what wasn't, and what was offensive.
Yeah, I would imagine if a song like this was, you know, probably put out today, was he really being that offensive?
As it was put to me, there is a term in this song that is the equivalent of using the N-word.
okay,
in terms of
which
for
isn't
people
cool.
of Asian descent, which I was completely unaware of, but then once you hear that, you realize, man, that's not good.
Yeah.
So that song got away with a lot back then that they wouldn't be able to get away with now.
Fair enough.
I'm
sure there's a lot of music like that.
Probably.
Books like that.
Probably. Okay, so we teased this before the break. Dave Tepper, one of your favorite people, but not that Dave Tepper. Dave Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, has come out and said he has sat back the first year or two to observe, but that he is not going to accept mediocrity long term. So that behooved some people in the media to start asking the question and asking around about what does that say about Ron Rivera, the fairly long tenured coach of the Carolina Panthers. in terms of his longevity with the franchise, to which some people have uncovered and said that if they don't make the playoffs and do some things, he may be in jeopardy of losing his job. To which Rivera has come out today and said, I don't accept mediocrity either. Maybe, and that's the right thing to say, Ron, but I don't know if I'd be commenting on that because it basically could seal your fate because I don't see any way the Panthers make the playoffs in the NFC.
Well, he's agreeing with his boss. I mean, I don't know if it's, unless he did it in a smart aleck type of tone, I would imagine, you know, that was like him agreeing with his boss. And you're right. Look, this is a guy that bought the team a year ago, and he's probably, he has big plans. They have one of the oldest stadiums in the NFL. He's looking to genuinely replace it. He's trying to make this team a team of contention. He doesn't want to sit there and be a mediocre team. Now, when Ron Rivera, you know, had the benefit of having Cam Newton and they made it to the Super Bowl, that was 1 year. They really haven't been the same since. And so now I think, like, similar to Fertitta and what he's done, when you buy a new franchise, you kind of let everybody that's in place kind of do their job. You're kind of getting your feet wet. And then later, you might come and put your footprint or fingerprint on this team if you want to be that involved.
I mean, I look at Tillman Fertitta. Tillman Fertitta basically, by the time the sale was final with the Rockets, he took the time to say, I'm not going to shake anything up now. I'm going to observe.
Sure.
Right? But he also had a franchise that was winning. And he got in at the right time to experience them making another good run. When you look at the Panthers, we have already talked about the fact that, look, whether healthy or not, and he hasn't been healthy all year, Cam Newton's probably going to be playing somewhere else after this season. Twofold. One, they're on the hook for $19 million of his $21 million if they keep him. If they keep him, it's 21. If they unload 19 of it, they're only on the hook for $2 million. Kyle Allen has been serviceable. And it looks like they're in a position where they're probably going to be in rebuild mode more than go-for-it mode. And they're also going to have to pay Christian McCaffrey, who's a stud, who is working on his rookie contract, who at some point, him and a few other players that are good for that team are going to have to get wrapped up long-term. And they could use Cam's money to do that. So with all that being said, I don't think that's a franchise that's going to escape the term mediocre for the short term, or depending on how it goes with picks and otherwise and salary issues long term. So I don't know if that's a win for Rivera. It's a lose-lose situation for Rivera. For him to say that, I'm sure it's the right thing to say for the fan base, but I'd say based on where they sit this year and with how the landscape looks in terms of talent in the NFC, I don't see it anytime soon where they're going to turn it around and be one of the top five or six franchises in the NFC.
Well, that's probably going to bother David Tepper because he's like, he hates mediocrity. He hates being such a middle-of-the-boat type of team so much that he literally loses sleep, he says. He says that he's said it multiple times where he loses sleep. He lost sleep when they lost to, I believe it was at the Falcons. He does not want to just stay put at this point. He wants to change. And so I can see Ron Rivera being one of the guys, being a victim of the new era there at Carolina. And they're already talking about potential candidates to replace him. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I mean, he's proven to do some good things. And if you're moving on from Cam Newton, it doesn't necessarily mean you can't start fresh if you keep Ron Rivera there. But that's up to David Tepper and company. Because you can just add a new quarterback.
They are the definition of mediocrity. Because if you're going to start over and you want to rebuild, then you just suck. See the Spurs. See, you know, the teams that have just completely, if you're going to suck, you might as well all out suck like the Dolphins this year to try and get the best pick possible.
Right.
But if you're going to hang on to a McCaffrey and you're going to, you know, compete week in, week out and not do what the Dolphins do and take all their best players and put them on IR, then you're not going to have one of the top picks to get the quarterback of the future or whatever weapons you may need. Like when you got McCaffrey at the top of a draft. So I think they're kind of the definition of mediocrity. It doesn't look like they have enough talent to compete with the Saints and the Packers and the upper echelon teams in the NFC, the Cowboys. So then you should either suck or be the Panthers, which is middle of the road.
Yeah, I'm with you. And he might be thinking, I mean, what are they, 5-5 at this point?
Middle of the road. Mediocre.
He might be thinking like that. He might be giving up on this season right now. I mean,
but I'm going to say, if you're going to give up on it, then really suck.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what. And he's not even commenting on the general manager's fade either.
Right.
Marty Herney. True. Like, so it may be a situation where he just cleans house and just starts fresh. And that might be the ideal situation for him at this point, because I wonder if we can get Marty Herney. He used to do a show with us here. But
I think once you're a team employee, he's probably get banned. A gag order. Because I know with Keenan McCardell, he used to be on our show obviously all the time.
Well, he does, not the GM. The GM doesn't necessarily.
He can pick and choose what he does, but I think they probably limit how much media they actually do, and they probably leave it to just the locals.
Funny story about Marty Herney. He was doing a show out there on the ESPN affiliate in Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and they were always concerned about where their studio was in terms of being on, like, in the corner street, because they felt like it was way too close to the street.
Mm-hmm.
And they always had this fear that a car would literally crash into their building while they're on their show. And sure enough.
No way.
They were live, doing a live broadcast, and a car just crashed into their studio live in the middle of their show.
Is there video of that anywhere?
No, there's audio. You can hear the car crash in the
show.
That's
pretty awesome.
Yeah. I remember him. I will never forget that. Like, that has got to be the crazy. You're sitting there on an ESPN radio affiliate in a studio just doing a show, and next thing you know, there's a hood.
Like with us, I wouldn't worry about a car like accidentally crashing through. I would worry about a listener basically trying to kill Barry.
It's a good thing we're not on the first floor, huh?
Yeah.
Because nobody.
Like yesterday, every religious person in the world wanted to kill Barry. So I would say that if we were on the first floor with glass windows, we would be encouraging people to throw stones.
Well, when you start talking about religion and stuff like that, sometimes that's what happens. But you know what? Barry welcomes that, because he does not mind going at anybody.
That's right.
He ain't scared.
Nope, that's exactly right.
He ain't
right.
scared. So, yeah, I can see a few people being upset.
Texans news and notes as we get ready for Thursday Night Football against the Colts. The injury report comes out.
I saw that.
Mike Adams, concussion, out. Lonnie Johnson, ankle, out. Justin Reed, that's a big one. Concussion and shoulder, out. Not that that can't change, but that is their status as of today. Limited participation. Oh, looky, Will Fuller, hamstring, limited participation. Tayshawn Gibson, back, limited participation. Bradley Roby, hamstring, questionable, but limited participation. I'm encouraged by those three more than I'm discouraged by did not participate.
Yeah. I mean, I guess of all those names, would you say Roby is probably one of the more
important? Got to have him back.
You got to have him back at this point. Short turnaround, short week. You really, really need him back. This is a bad situation, at least in terms of injuries for the Texans. But and obviously, there's a lot of teams going through the same thing. Well, but I think Roby is important.
And so are your two safeties, Tayshawn Gibson and Justin Reed. You need one, but you really need both. Especially against the Colts. And again, for them, we don't know about T.Y. Hilton, who has been out nursing injury. So we'll see if he's going to play. But you got to believe if he needs any motivation to want to get back on the field, he's playing the Texans. Because anytime he plays the Texans, he's pretty much guaranteed for a hundo and a touchdown, if not more.
Yeah. So how do the Texans, after being absolutely handled by the Ravens and on a short week, how do they handle this? Do you think this is a motivated team? Do you think this is a team
Look at me. Let me just say this. If you can't be motivated for this game with this scenario, with everything on the line, then you're the Kelvin Cato of the NFL. You shouldn't be playing, and you're picking up a check. Because the fact of the matter is, in my estimation, I think in most estimation, whoever wins this game is probably, they got the inside track on the division. They're going to be a playoff team. Whoever loses this game, probably the rest of the way, especially with the Texans facing New England next week, probably has sealed their fate for not making the playoffs and or not winning the division. So it's a must win for me, and that's why you better be extremely motivated, and at home you better play extremely well if you're the Texans.
Not only that, I feel like Tom Brady has already kind of got, I wouldn't say a bad game, but a not so good game out of the way under his belt. And I don't know if he's going to necessarily have many more bad games for the remainder of the season. So you come off an absolute beatdown that the Ravens serve you, and then you lose to a divisional team on Thursday Night Football. I don't know how or where your confidence is going into the next week and playing against New England. I would imagine you're not in very good spirits at that point. And it'd be very, very impressive if they could pull off a win against the Patriots, assuming...
Screw the Patriots, though, Nick. If you don't win against the Colts, it doesn't matter what you do against the Patriots, right?
Sure. I'm basically saying this game could be an absolute crusher for them, is what I'm basically saying. And I think you're saying the same thing. It's in a divisional opponent. The good thing...
But think about this. We talked about the three-game stretch. Baltimore, Indy, New England.
Yeah.
Right? We said, hey, I said they, if they get one out of three... they'd be okay. But when you think about it, to your point you just made, if you get absolutely worked by the Ravens, you lose any kind of heartbreaker to the Colts, which basically seals the division against you, and then you get punished by the Patriots, and it's a team you cannot beat, they're your kryptonite.
It's a bad thing. It's a bad thing, especially when...
your season's over.
Yeah, and the Texans are getting all this credit, for rightfully so, for being able to stop the run. People still think the Colts can run the ball... with the advent of the Marlon Mack hand injury.
Yeah, we'll see.
They think that O-line will do the trick.
Oh, their line is tough. We know that.
So,
if there's keg stands in the end zone for the Colts this week, you know you've got problems.
Absolutely.
All right, we've got two in the books, 1 hour to go, 60 minutes on the clock. When we come back, it's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.